Welcome again to Proverbs, our Proverbs study online. In the last couple of podcasts, we had basically an introduction, and then we discussed the outline and the audience. And of course, in the introduction, we looked at wisdom, and we described what that was. And essentially, it is living as if God matters, living in the fear of God. And of course, we had to define the fear of God at that point. And the fear of God is thinking of yourself in proper perspective to Him. And so we spent some time with that. And then, in the second podcast, we looked at the objectives that are stated in the first chapter of Proverbs. And we were able to reduce that, summarize that, by calling it seeking truth and embracing truth. And we saw that in verses 2 and 4 in the first chapter. That Solomon calls us to consider and process, in other words, embrace, and he calls us to have discernment. He calls it discretion here, discernment or critical thinking, and that's in verse 4. And that would be, you could summarize that as seeking truth. So seeking it and embracing it. And then we also looked at the audience, and we found that the audience is basically three people. The wise person, and that, of course, is a person who chooses God. The fool, and that is a person who chooses themselves. And the naive, and this is a person who hasn't chosen anything. Basically, they're they're walking in a life of immaturity and being impressionable and being exploitable. They will believe anything. They're gullible. They're immature. Solomon calls them youth. And that's actually where we're going to start today in our study. And then the last thing we did in the previous recordings was that we looked at dividing the book of Proverbs into six sections. And those six sections were Solomon's primer, or primer, for youth, Solomon's pleas to youth, Solomon's commentary on life, Solomon's Proverbs outtakes, believe it or not, there is a collection of outtakes, and then the Oracle of Agur, and then lastly, the Proverbs of Bathsheba. So we begin actually studying the text today by looking at chapter 1, and I think it would be helpful to read and see who is being spoken to and what they're being told. So let's go ahead and read. And we'll read through 19. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the naive, to the youth, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. To understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, there are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole, as those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious wealth. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Throw in your lot with us. We shall all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they hasten to shed blood. Indeed, it is useless to spread the net in the eyes of a bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessors. Now, this is only half of the chapter, a little over half, but you can see already who the audience is of this chapter. And we saw earlier, when we looked at the outline, that it was possible to call this the teenager. Now, that's not a term that would have been used back then, but that's what he means when he says the youth. And we have other evidence that that's who is being spoken to, more than just the word youth, okay? So, let's look at that. Verse 8, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching." This is the only place where he appeals to the reader to think of his mother and father in the same sentence. Mother and father. He'll say it again he won't say it again. This is the only place. And what he's doing here is he's saying, he's appealing to the person still in the home, the young man still in the home, and he's saying, "Don't you love your father? Don't you love your mother and myself?" So this is a person who is really still listens to his parents. Maybe only because he lives in the house with them, in the same house. Maybe that's the only reason. But he's still someone who is teachable and persuadable and able to be appealed to. Look at verse 8, where he says, "My son." Look at verse 10. Where he says, "My son." Look at verse 15, where he says, "My son." Now, he is going to say "son" and "sons" later on in other chapters. And so that alone isn't enough to indicate who the audience is. But if you take that and you take the appeal to the individual concerning father and mother, and you take the word naive, and you take the word youth, and how about throw in your lot with us? Throw in your lot with us. Verse 14. You take these things together, and you can see that this is a very impressionable person. Let's jump over to verse 23, where he says, "Turn to my reproof." Look at verse 25. "You did not want my reproof." Look at verse 30. "They would not accept my counsel and spurned all my reproof." Again, this is someone who is still under the authority of the home, of the parents. Let's go on. Verse 20. "Wisdom shouts in the street. She lifts her voice in the square. At the head of the noisy streets, she cries out. At the entrance of the gates to the city, she utters her sayings. How long, O naive ones, will you love simplicity? And scoffers delight themselves in scoffing, and fools hate knowledge. Turn to my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you. Because I called, and you refused. I stretched out my hand, and no one paid attention. And you neglected all my reproof, and did not want my reproof. I will even laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your dread comes. When your dread comes like a storm, and your calamity comes on like a whirlwind. When distress and anguish come on you, then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they shall not find me. Because they hated knowledge, and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would not accept my counsel. They spurned all my reproof. So they shall eat of the fruit of their own way and be satiated with their own devices. For the waywardness of the naive shall kill them, and the complacency of fools shall destroy them. But He who listens to me shall live securely and shall be at ease from the dread of evil. Now, verse 20 through that last verse, verse 33, notice there's no mention of the Son in there. The Father is not appealing to the Son in this half of the chapter. And at the same time, notice that wisdom is personified. Wisdom is given a personality, a personhood. And so we can see that Solomon is now speaking of wisdom in the abstract sense, and certainly a little more abstract because of the personification. Let's clear up something. There have been some people who have said that Solomon's literally writing to his literal son, and I don't think that's true. And there are indications that would say this is not his literal son. For one, although we have the word son in chapters 1 through 7, he says it again and again and again, and he sometimes says sons, and that's just the point. Sometimes he doesn't say son, sometimes he says sons. And so what we know from this is he's not talking to his literal son, which, of course, would have been Rehoboam. And unfortunately, Rehoboam, if he did know of any of this writing, if he did know of this book, Rehoboam, he certainly didn't respond to it, because if anyone was a fool, Rehoboam was a fool. Rehoboam is the one who, when his father died, he received the kingdom, and when his advisors came, the advisors who had worked with his father Solomon, came to him and said, okay, let us know how you're going to do things, and let us get busy in doing your bidding. And Rehoboam came back with, you know what? My father was too easygoing. My father was a little bit of a wimp. I am going to be like a scorpion. That's what he said. That's what he said. You can find that in 1 Kings. And so he was not a real wise man. So what Solomon is doing here is he's not appealing to his literal son. He's appealing to sons as in very young men. And he'll continue with that idea, that word son and sons, actually for quite a while. He'll do it in 1 through 7. He'll do it again in chapter 8. He'll do it again in chapter 10 and 13 and 15 and 19 and 24. So he's always, just about always, saying son or sons. And all he's saying by doing that is he's saying young people, very young men. And he is obviously an elder. He's obviously a much older person. And there's no reason to believe that he's ever speaking to his literal son. Scripture only tells us of one son that Solomon had, even though he had over 1,000 women. The Bible records only one son. Two daughters, by the way, are recorded, but only one son. The son in chapter 12 of 1 Kings, the two daughters in chapter 4 of 1 Kings. Although Jewish tradition, the rabbis and Jewish leaders of old, and I think many of them today would continue with that tradition, they speak of three sons, but we have no proof of that. That is only a traditional comment, and that's all we know. But again, he's not speaking to his literal son. He's speaking to young men, and in this chapter, chapter 1, very young men, men who are young enough to still be in the home and still be affected, still be reached by their parents. So this is a very interesting chapter, and as you can see, it is directed toward the naive, that is the one who is vulnerable and exploitable, and so forth. Did you notice the mention of the fear of the Lord again? So it's mentioned twice in this chapter. Once in the early part, verse 7, and again near the end of the chapter in verse 29. And let's back up a moment and talk about that latter half of the chapter, verses 20 through 33. And that's the personification of wisdom. And this is the first time in Proverbs, although it's going to happen a couple more times. Solomon uses a technique wherein he gives wisdom and folly, both personal voices. He gives it here to wisdom. He'll do it a couple more times. And he also, a couple of times, will give it to folly. And here, there's no gender to this personification, but in a couple of the other personifications, there will be gender, and it will always be a woman. Both on the wisdom side and on the folly side, it will be a woman. And I believe there's a reason for that, and we'll see what that reason might be when we get there. But here's the point. He's making wisdom attractive, and he's making wisdom able to be listened to, able to be, catch the ear of the reader by giving it a personal voice. That's the technique. That's the tool that he's using. And that's what he does in verse 20 through verse 33. And because that is the tool, the technique, we have to avoid misunderstanding who is speaking when they say, I will laugh at your calamity, verse 26. I will laugh at your calamity. This is not God speaking. And this is not Solomon speaking. This is wisdom speaking. And by saying this, Solomon is saying that what you are doing when you behave the way the person behaves in verses 20 through 33 is that it is mocking wisdom. And so wisdom, in return, mocks foolishness. That's an interesting concept. It's just built in. It's intuitive. That wisdom makes folly look foolish, and foolishness makes wisdom look, unbearable and restrictive. And that's what's being said here. Verse 26, I'll laugh at your calamity. I'll mock when your dread comes like a storm and your calamity comes on like a whirlwind. Verse 28, then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek diligently, but they shall not find me. This is wisdom speaking. It's hard to put our minds in that place. This is not God. Now God can laugh at foolish people, and he has, and he can say, you're not listening to me, and so you're going to get what you deserve. He can do that, but that's not what's happening here. This is wisdom being personified, and thus having wisdom responding to the fool, which is wisdom actually not being sentient, would not respond. But here, wisdom is being portrayed as being a sentient being. And that is a very interesting tool, a very interesting technique. And nothing more than that. It's not God saying that, and it's not Solomon saying that. Verse 29, they hated knowledge. They did not choose the fear of the Lord. Don't forget, the fear of the Lord underlies the idea of acquiring wisdom. Remember the prerequisite in verse 7 of chapter 1? The beginning of knowledge. Other translations have the first part of knowledge. The best way to look at that, to render that, is the prerequisite. You cannot be wise unless you fear the Lord. And you won't fear the Lord without a relationship with Jesus Christ. That's very plain. So we did look at, speaking of the fear of the Lord, we did look at what that was in the previous recordings, and so we don't need to spend a lot of time with that, but we looked at what it is and what it isn't, and we looked at a few verses that explain that, and I think that you do well to listen to that part if you haven't done so already. That would be part one. Now, let's back up and let's look at something here that not only reinforces who the audience is for this, but also is a very timely idea. Let's look at verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us ambush the innocent without cause, let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who could do it down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious wealth. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Throw in your lot with us. We shall all have one purse. Doesn't that sound like young hoodlums? Doesn't that sound like young, irrepressible, unmoored youth with time on their hands? Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And it's a warning. It's a warning. And it's a warning about peer pressure. There's enticement, and there's the enemy through foolish people trying to entice the naive and trying to capitalize on youth's energy and enthusiasm. The energy and enthusiasm of youth is a very positive thing, but it can be turned to evil. It can become negative. It's an age, isn't it? A teenager who wants to act. That's the whole value of sports programs for that age. It channels that into usefulness, into good instead of evil. And this is what the foolish, that would be the people who's talking and enticing and saying, throw in your lot with us, that's the danger of them when they are saying these things to the naive. The naive has no defenses. He's impressionable. And he is triggered by the fact that his own psyche and his own mind and his own heart and his own body wants to do these things or something like them that he's being pressured to do. But he has to resist. He has to resist. Let's look at verse 13. We shall find all kinds of precious wealth. We shall fill our houses with spoil. In the ESV, that word spoil is plunder. Plunder. And that's a military word. This is further dehumanization of the naive. It's further pressure of the naive person to become less human than he was made by God, to become a machine, an evil machine. This is the language of war. Look at the next verse. Throw in your lot with us, we shall have one purse. Again, when you look at gangs and the appeal that gangs are to especially very vulnerable young people, this is the appeal of belonging. Throw in with us your lot with us and we'll have one purse. You know, you'll have community with us. You'll have meaning with us. You'll be around people that think like you and are like you and act like you and like you. And that's the appeal. And it's a very strong appeal. It is probably the strength of appeal on the same level as we'll read later on with fornication, with adultery. Only here it's the very young youth whose hormones are just, and whose mental state and whose just vibrancy and virility is just screaming to be used. And it can be used in the wrong way. When I was young, this age, before my mother died and I went into a state program that helped me out. But before that, I was caught up in the neighborhood gang, and we did things. We broke into houses, and we did some bad things. But this is because of the community, the appeal of the gang, the appeal of the camaraderie. You could even call it fellowship. And this is why we know this chapter is directed toward that very, very vulnerable individual who, again, we would call today, we would call them teenagers. You know, between, let's say, you know, 10 and 15, or even 9 and 15. This is the problem. This is their trap. So now let's look at 15. Let's look at verse 15. Solomon says, "My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their paths, for their feet run to evil, and they hasten to shed blood. Indeed, it is useless to let's back up. So 15 and 16, do not walk in the way, keep your feet, for their feet run to evil, and they hasten to shed blood. Solomon is describing these people. In verse 10, he says, sinners. In verse 12, he says, Sheol, which to the Jew was not hell. That is an incorrect rendering. That is an incorrect interpretation. It's not hell. Sheol is, in fact, the ancient Jews, even modern Jews today, don't believe in hell. They didn't really have a concept of hell. Now, believing Jews, that is, covenant Jews that believed God and it was counted to them as faith, and who were in essence really Christians, they were Old Testament Christians, they knew what Sheol meant. It didn't mean hell. They didn't really have a concept of hell. What they had, though, was the word Sheol, which meant simply the grave. And it meant to them that once you die, the lights go out. That's how they looked at things. Did they have an understanding of the afterlife, of eternity? Yes, they did. David sure did. And many others did. Isaiah did. And Mary and her sister and brother in the New Testament, whose theology was Old Testament based, don't forget, they had a concept of the afterlife and eternity. So we can't say that all Jews didn't understand the afterlife, but I think the rank and file were largely unaware of eternal things. So what I'm saying is the word Sheol there does not mean hell. It just means the end of life. You know, the lights go out, everything turns black. And what Solomon is saying by putting these words in the mouths of the fools who are trying to entice the naive, he's saying that they have no respect for other people. They have no respect for life. Can you see that? Can you see that in verse 12? Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who go down to the pit. These are people who have no respect for the lives of other people. Because they're saying, we'll send them to death. We will treat them as if they don't exist, as if they're not human. Also in verse 12, what does he say? He says, we're going to swallow them. We're going to swallow them. That makes them predators, don't you see? That makes these foolish people, these hoodlums, these gangsters, it makes them predators. And then in verse 16, Solomon says, they rush to do evil. He says it twice. They hurry to do evil. That's their thing. There is a verse in Proverbs that says, I forget where it is at the moment, but it says that there are foolish predator people who eat, sleep, and live sin. They eat, sleep, and live conflict with other people. They're just people who can't leave people alone. And this is what we have here. They're predators. And then verses 17 through 19 describe the end result of their actions, of their foolishness. And it basically says, they can't see that they aren't just ruining other people's lives, they're also ruining their own. They're ruining their own lives. You see what it says? It's useless to spread the net in the eyes of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. And the ways of the people who do these things, the way is their life is taken from them. Verse 19, their life is taken from them. And they don't even know it. They don't even know it. Now, to continue to unpack some of this, verses 20 through 33, we talked about that being the personification of wisdom. But at the same time, it's also Solomon's technique through the personification of wisdom. It's his technique for coming back to reminding this youthful person, this teenager. He says, you know, don't forget your teaching. Don't ignore the godly teaching you have had up until now. That's what he means by wisdom shouts in the street. She lifts her voice in the square. He says, you've been living in an environment where you were accosted with training all the time. And even now, when you are beginning to transition into a life of your own, you're not there yet, you're not out on your own yet, but you're transitioning into that, you're going to still hear the echoes of that teaching. And it's going to be out there. Wisdom is always accessible. People don't want it because they don't want the God who gives it, but it's always there. That's what it means by in the square. She lifts her voice in the square. The square was a public place. It was the center of the village, the center of the town. Solomon is saying, you got teaching from us, and in a year or two, when you go out on your own, you're going to hear reinforcement of that teaching, and I want you to listen to it. I don't want you to stop listening. Well, that's all we have time for today, but we're going to continue on to the end of this chapter and go into the next time. And I hope you're getting something from this. I hope this is encouraging you to believe the Bible and to regard it as something very, very special, supernatural even. And until we come back with another study, believe God. So you can see what Solomon is doing with this person in this stage of life. Is he's warning, sort of preemptively, he's warning this young man who's about to become a man. Take with you the teaching that you've received, and recognize the wisdom that will be around you and that aligns with and resonates with and meshes with all that we've taught you when you were young and in our home. And don't forget it. And Solomon postulates the result of that not happening. When you start with verse 24, behold, I called and you refused. I stretched out my hand and no one paid attention. There again, no one paid attention, meaning this wisdom was always available. It was always there. Your mother and your father have given it to you. You hear it echoed in life as you go out on your own. And yet, you can choose, even though you will have access to it, and it will not be a lack of information if you fall away from grace. It'll be because you choose. No one paid attention, verse 24. You neglected all my counsel and did not want my reproof. I'll even laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your dread comes. Again, this is wisdom speaking. Wisdom is saying, again, personified, that there's no middle ground. You either embrace wisdom or you get consequences. That's all that's saying. When your dread comes like a storm and your calamity comes on like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come on you, then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they shall not find me. Can God talk like this? Yes. Has he talked like this? Yes. But that's not what's happening here. Wisdom personified, remember? Wisdom is saying, you make your bed and you sleep in it. That's all it's saying. You make your bed and you'll have to sleep in it. 29, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord, they would not accept my counsel. They spurned all my reproof. So they shall eat of the fruit of their own way and be satiated with their own devices. Do you see? Choices. Wisdom is saying, you make the choice and you get what you choose. For the waywardness of the naive shall kill them, and the complacency of fools shall destroy them. But he who listens to me shall live securely and shall be at ease from the dread of evil. This would be an excellent teaching to give very young men, and women for that matter, very young boys, very young girls, before they are, you know, when they're a couple of years or a few years from blossoming into adulthood, this would be an excellent teaching for them. To warn them preemptively, do you see? This is the preemptive chapter. And I know there has been such teaching. I remember decades ago running across material that was put out by this religious organization or that one, and it was very obviously geared toward the naive, the immature, the inexperienced. And it was very interesting material. It was very forthright and very hard hitting and very good, you know. Material on the sexual drive and how to control it and all of that. And it was just being social and dealing with people and navigating the world in a good way, you know. And that's what this is. That's what this is. Beware, Solomon is saying, of the choices that will have to be made as life rushes at you at full speed as you become an adult. Prepare for that. Be aware of it. Well, this is the end of chapter 1, and I hope that this has been enlightening and been instructive. And please hear this material and understand this teaching in light of the gospel. That God is not willing for any to perish, but for all to come to repentance. That happens through belief in Jesus Christ. Is he God? And did he die for you? And that's what we want to keep uppermost in our mind as we look at Solomon's writings. Well, until next time, then we'll look at chapter 2, which deals with another phase of the young person's life. Until then, believe God.